When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Stop in and save big money on your next outdoor lumber project now at Menards. Menards has the largest selection of AC2 pressure-treated lumber and decking, and it's easy to load in our outdoor lumber yard. Plus, you can get free estimates fast with our deck design program in-store or on Menards.com. Check out our weekly flyer for more great deals happening now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
This show is brought to you by The Makery, the podcast network for makers.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. 2023. Knife Talk. We're still here every Monday morning. How are you all? I hope you've all had a great, great new year. I'm Craig Lockwood of Chop Knives, joined as always by Jeff Fader of Fader Knives, and Mareko Mamasi of Mamasi Fire Arts. How are you guys?
Doing well.
Jeff, good.
Okay. I was like, Jeff just muted himself. He's probably good, blowing
good.
His nose.
Good, good. No, I was burping. I had just drinking a little seltzer, and I thought it'd be great if I, all of a sudden, I just drank this seltzer. I'm thinking, I bet I can not burp. I bet I can just like hold it and not when I undo it. And then you said, how you doing, Jeff? I'm like, oh, for fuck's sake. Unplugged it, and there you go. So good.
So how are the New Year's hangovers? Have they cleared?
Oh, I didn't even have one. Really? I had two drinks all night.
Wow.
And they were early because I was driving. I was being responsible, Craig. Not like you and your French fucking crazy people out there.
Wow.
Just driving around with bottles of wine in the car, slugging on it. I'm just joking. I mean, that probably happens, but.
It does a lot. We booked a hotel this year, so we didn't have to drive anywhere.
Nice.
And it was great. It was the best New Year I've had in a long, long time.
Really?
Normally it's just my wife and I. And, you know, you normally, by New Year, you're done with Christmas, you're done with eating too much, done with all the rest of it. But my sister's been over. And Amy's parents said they would babysit all three kids for us, which was like the first time, like overnight. And we're like, well, there's nothing going on around here. Let's go to the big city. So we went to Limoges, which is our sort of nearest big city. The four of us booked a hotel and had a really good night out. And yeah, banging head the next morning, I'm afraid. But it was well worth it. It was a good night.
Wow.
Did you say before the end of our last episode that you were going to be skiing? Did you end up going skiing?
We did go skiing, and we came back up. So we had 5 days skiing. We came back after the third day because there's a big problem. There's no snow anywhere.
I was just going to say, I just saw a post of the French Alps, and people were skiing like in the gutter of the side of the road.
Well, thankfully, where we were, they had snow machines. So the runs had, they had plenty of snow on the runs. But if you looked immediately next to the run, it's just like grass, And it was, so very few runs were open because obviously they had to pay attention to these to make sure these were good. And after 3 days, we were like, okay, we've skied, we've had a good time. Let's just head home. We were all still feeling a bit shitty. Whereas, we've had a bit of a sort of flu-y and that kind of thing over Christmas anyway. So, yeah, we had a great time, but we cut it short simply because there wasn't that many runs open.
Sure.
But it was good. It was good. And I said we had a great New Year then. So, it's Christmas was hectic, but New Year has been really good, which is unusual. It's usually the other way around for us, so I'm very happy.
Nice.
What did you get up to, Jeff?
Well, it was we had a lot of plans, and then we had things. My problem is in life is when I try to take care of everything I'm supposed to take care of. And when things come at me that are out of my control, I have a hard time dealing with them. Like I find myself being like slightly unraveled. And we have all these plans to cook. And I went down to the basement to, I always go down to the basement to kind of, you know, move some stuff around or check some things. And I noticed that there, the drain to the main sink in the kitchen was broken. So it started dripping.
Huh.
No. And New Year's Eve, right before we were about to cook some food and go out to watch the ball drop. And I'm like,
That shit is going to see some action over Christmas and New Year.
Well,
sorted now. Yeah.
So it's just like Hillary said, we'll just call a plumber. I'm like, I'm not calling a plumber. I can fix this drain. And I had to go to Home Depot in the right before they're about to close, and I had to try to get all this stuff. And I was like, it sucked. It totally sucked. And then we couldn't fix it that night, so we just left the sink filled with. It really, really threw me for a loop. And then that night, I'm talking to my friend who's a contractor, and so how should I do it? And it's like in the weird space, and I was just like, it sucked. Frankly, I was like I unraveled over a fixing a fucking drain pipe. And we got it fixed the next day, and it was like my New Year's resolution was to try to deal with things out of my control a little bit better. So that was that, and otherwise it was good. The bittersweet. We finally got my mother out of her apartment. I had to all through December. I had to get her stuff out, and she's now safe and sound in this place, and handed in the keys, and thought maybe all right now that life is going to be a little bit normal, and now, phone calls are happening. So it's 2022 leaked into 2023, and that's just the way it is. So,
yeah. Literally leaked. Yeah.
Literally leaked. But you take care. That's the hardest part about being a maker and being in business and being a small industry or whatever, small business, is you can plan and plan and plan and plan, but there are these little things that get in your way, and it's how do you deal with them? That's the hardest part. You're going to how do you deal with these things that are out of your control?
Without a big team of support, it's all up to you. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Right. 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 Right.
Yes. So, Mareko, you had a family time then, I assume, if you're driving around?
It was super low key, actually. A friend had a wedding reception. They'd actually gotten.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
They'd
actually gotten married a couple days prior, but just very small. Which is actually a very good move with maybe like the crucial 50 or 60 people, like really close family. Mm-hmm. But they kept the actual ceremony small. And then a couple days later or a week later, whatever it was, they had the reception. And so they did it New Year's Eve. They did it at 8 o'clock. So it's like post dinner time, so they don't have to feed people. They did have hors d'oeuvres, but they didn't have to feed anybody. It was just music, cocktails. They had a coffee stand, and they had, of course, like cake, desserts, and stuff like that, and a photo booth. And it was cool because there's a buddy of mine from high school. I live in the town that I grew up in, so a lot of people came back into town for their wedding that I hadn't seen in a while, and so it was good to catch up with folks.
Nice.
And yeah, but it was super low key. And man, anymore these days, I've been going out, not a ton. Like I went out a few times over just before Christmas and New Year's. And I've actually stopped drinking when I go out, especially if I'm going to be driving, which sounds terrible now that I reflect on what I just said. I'm usually pretty cognizant about, when to stop and having drinks and stuff like that. But, I don't really go out very much anymore. And so alcohol takes a little bit more of a toll on me these days. And I'm not even really drinking at home. So when I go out, I just don't drink. And just the peace of mind, honestly, more than anything, that I'm gonna be safe. I'm not gonna accidentally hurt anybody. I'm not gonna get pulled over for some stupid shit and get my ass busted. It's so great. So so that's been one of my new things lately.
And you have a clear head in the morning too.
God damn it! It sounds like I just drive around like a drunk asshole all the time. I'm gonna get into this whole sober driving thing. I don't know about it, but I'm trying it.
You know, it's funny. It's really actually quite funny that you say that because I grew up in New York City, so I didn't get a driver's license until I was in college.
Right.
And you know, even in my small town now, when we go out for drinks, I can walk to town. And growing up, we could go anywhere. You live in New York City, you just take the subway or a cab or a bus.
Sure.
So I never really, drunk driving was never an issue, but it was very it was scary, but at the same time, it was just foreign to me. It was what the fuck do I need? Just get on the subway. You know, so I never had to worry about that.
It's
but
yeah,
it's
rife,
more scary.
Yeah. It's absolutely rife. Because we're in the middle of nowhere as well. So the bars that we do have, it's just full of people getting hammered, jumping in their car, then driving home. And you think, okay, you know, maybe there's no... There are police around here, but they're often in the bar drinking too.
Shut up.
You know? It's, seriously. And there's a thing here in France where you can't actually lose your license for drink driving. You can lose your normal car license, but they have something called a sans permis, which is a no-permit car. And it's a little... It's almost like a lawnmower engine. You can hear them coming from a mile away. They still do sort of 40, 50 miles an hour.
Oh, Jesus.
So if you actually do lose your license for drink driving, you can still drive one of these on the road. So you often see loads of these parked outside bars because they're like, well, there's nothing you can do. You know, I'm allowed to drive this because it doesn't need a permit, and I'm allowed to drive on that. So yeah, it's rife. It's really bad. So yeah, if you're out at night walking and you see a car coming towards you, you can pretty much guarantee they're drunk driving that car.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Yeah. Here in Washington, there's a I think it's under a certain power, like under a certain CCs or speed limit, like a top 10 speed limit. You don't need a driver's license, but you hear these fucking things coming down the fucking street, right?
Two strokes,
But you can still get a DUI on it. You can get a fucking DUI on a bicycle. Here.
On a bicycle?
Yeah. It's a form of transportation.
That's embarrassing. And
that's super embarrassing.
What you went for. That
But other than that, the party was great. Great to see people hang out and get home safe. Like, 12 o'clock hit, and I was like, cool, time to go to bed. I was so fucking exhausted. And then I just finished a couple days ago a knife, and I got it posted, which was really nice to get all the kind words. And it felt good to start off the year strong with a fresh knife right out the gate. And so that's where I'm at. I'm getting ready to – I do want to say real quick. I've been promoting my calendars, and there was a delay with the printers. I don't know what happened in the machines, but they were down. So anybody who's waiting on a calendar, they're supposed to be getting here. Well, let's see. This episode airs Monday, so the Friday before today. For us, it's tomorrow. So fucking confusing. Anyways, we're supposed to be getting them. Get them mailed out as soon as possible. I apologize for the delay. And we were running a deal through the Patreon where if you sign up with the Patreon at the $15 level or higher, you get a free calendar as well as access to the Patreon, the private Discord, and all the like private Q&As and shit. So we're going to extend that through the end of January. So if anybody missed that opportunity, there's a chance to, you know, sign up, get the calendar for $10 off, basically, because they're $25 otherwise.
Oh, cool.
And so, yeah. So I appreciate everybody's – Jesus, I'm new at this game. I had an alarm just go off. I appreciate everybody's patience.
Remind everybody about the calendar.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what it was. Okay, I'm done talking.
Okay, shall we talk about knives? Sort of why we're here, I suppose.
Yes.
Before we start the questions, I have a knife related thing to talk about.
Oh,
okay. Okay.
But I mean, you know, this is
no
this,
do it.
This
yeah.
This podcast is sponsored by Evenheat, manufacturers of the finest heat treat ovens available, isn't it? Are you guys there?
Are you trying to do an alley-oop?
I was trying to give you an alley-oop. Yeah.
Sorry. Anyway,
Knife Talk is sponsored by Evenheat, the manufacturers of the finest heat treat ovens available. To find your next oven, go to evenheat-kiln.com.
And you know what? If you go to knifetalk.net/heat, that will take you to Soul Ceramics, who are distributors of Evenheat, and you'll get $75 off and free shipping in the US. And I believe they've got some already made up. So you can just order, they'll ship immediately with that $75 off and all the rest of it. Link is down in the description. Okay. Sorry for not reading the cue there.
It's fine. We were having a good time.
My rhythm is all... Because I've been in a huge rush to set up, because we're doing this a day early as we normally do. I forgot all about it.
Don't worry.
Set up. My rhythm's all off, so hopefully we can...
Don't worry about it. Fine.
Deep breath. We'll get into it.
Well, I just wanted to bring this up because this is interesting. It's something we've never talked about, but at the same time, it just happened to me. So I don't know if you guys listen to Full Blast Podcast, but I...
Oh, jeez.
Let me finish. Let me get going. Let me get moving, dude. I interviewed our friend Kev Slattery. Kev Slattery from Australia. He's on the Knife Making Down Under podcast. It was a great conversation, and it was like about a lot about mental health and his struggles and stuff like that. So I got a message from his friend, and also, you know, Knife Making Down Under is Mert Tansu, Kev Slattery, and Corin. And so I got a message from Corin. Corin also runs this Australian knife making company called Gamaco. And he wrote me this message. He says, listen, I really appreciate what you did for Kev, and I want to send you this carbide-tipped hammer as thanks. And I said to him, like I normally say to everybody, don't send me anything. I'd prefer you not to send anything. And his response was, suck shit. I'm sending it to you. It wasn't, suck shit. I'm sending it to you anyway. So I said, okay, great. So he sent me this little hammer, and it arrived a couple days ago. And he calls it the Niroc, N-I-R-O-C, hammer. Corin spelled backwards is Niroc. So it's a small hammer. It's 8 ounces. They carve this Osage wood, and it's a brass hammer with these carbide tips. And he sent me a link to these videos about how you use them. And they're meant to be for straightening hardened steel knives. Now, I know right now Kyle Daly is like probably having a fucking stroke typing me right now saying, I saw those too. I know. So if you're in the United States and you're interested in these carbide tipped hammers, KH Daly, it's Kyle Daly. Don't need to write me, Kyle. I got you. He makes them and sells them too. So the idea is, they send me a video. It's a small hammer, 8 ounces, tiny. So it's a little hammer, and then it's got carbide ends. And what you do is, if you have the videos I've saw, if you have a full tang, full thickness hardened knife, like if you were getting stuff sent out and hardened, and they come back and there's a little bit of bow in it, what you do is you put it on a flat surface like an anvil, where it's the bow is, so the ends are up. So if you're bowing, the low spot is on the flat surface, and then your ends are sticking up into the air. And then you slowly, with not like, you don't go crazy, and this is a tiny hammer, you tap that area that's touching the hammer, the anvil, and then that slowly helps pull out all the bows. And you can watch these videos. I think Creeley Knives did a video, and I'm sure Kyle's done videos before. KH Daily, don't worry, Kyle, I got you. And
Kyle and his small tool.
It is remarkable. I haven't used it yet, but it arrived and it's beautiful. So it's a really interesting concept. And I think, and I don't know 100%, but I'm under the impression that like Carter Cutlery does it, and it's this way to flatten. I don't know if it's cold forging. I don't know exactly. Mareko, do you know anything about these hammers?
Yeah, it's definitely cold forging, and I believe it is a very traditional Japanese technique for correcting any kind of warps and wobbles. Actually, Don Nguyen also has a series where he's making a traditional yanagiba, which is like a Japanese sashimi knife. But part of the issue with the heat treating of the yanagibas is that, you know, they're very thick and then they're single bevel and you have this hollow on the backside. It makes all this weird stuff happen in the steel. You're creating all these weird stresses, or also relieving them as you grind stuff away. And so in his video, he's doing successive rounds of grinding and straightening, grinding, straightening, grinding, straightening, because the tap, because you are hitting it very light, because you are cold forging hardened steel, the forging work that you're doing is very superficial. And if you do go back in and do a little bit more grinding, you sure shit are going to grind right through that, and whatever you put into that steel is going to actually come back out of it. From what I understand, either if your blade's super thin already, then it's something that you can do early, but ideally you want to be doing this when you're closer to what your finish dimension of the knife is going to be. So like most of the way through your finish grinding. So that when you follow with any kind of hand sanding, even that you're not kind of working your way through this corrective work that you've done with the carbide tipped hammers to straighten out the knife.
from what I've seen, that from what I've seen, these guys, I think Creeley, I think it's Creeley, Creeley Blades did a video about it. A lot, what he was saying in the video was, and I'm sure that Kyle probably says the same thing in Corin as well, is that if you have a full, it would probably be easiest if you got, if let's say you're just making knives out of 3/32nds and you're heat treating them flat. From what Creeley was saying, he's like, sometimes I get stuff sent out, and when it comes back, you're not paying for these guys to straighten these things. Some of the heat treaters, depending on where it is, if it's a knife heat treating company, they're going to be a little bit more attuned to, you know, you can't send bananas back. But all of a sudden, you get a batch of knives that have been heat treated, and they all look like, you know, the letter C. You got to figure out a way to, I mean, either going to shim temper every single one of them a million times, or from what they were saying is you can repair a heat treated full thickness knife with these types of hammers. So pretty cool. I can't wait to try. I mean, I don't want to have to do it, but I'm glad that there's another option out there besides shim tempering.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I'm interested to see that. I looked those videos.
Yeah, so it's Gamaco has them. That's the Nyrock hammer. If you look at, I don't know if Gamaco has it. It's if you look at Corin's.
Yeah, they got Corin's, Instagram.
Corin's or Gamaco probably. He's. I know they're making them in batches, and Corin's making them. They're beautiful. Like he's machining the brass, and then he's. I think Kev actually worked on a lot of them, and the wood is beautiful. They're beautiful little hammers. Yeah. And then I know Kyle is making them too out of Cage Daily Knives. So, you know, look, it's something we don't talk about. We usually say shim temper, that's it. But now these little hammers are pretty cool. Carbide tips. I guess, and you maybe you know, Mareko, but the reasoning behind I'm not testing you. I don't honestly don't know. But imagining you can't use a real hammer. You're not using a forging hammer, you're using the carbide tip.
Yeah, you're using the carbide tip, and that is exactly why, is because it's the carbide tip is harder than the steel in your blade, and basically the reason, like you were saying earlier, you want kind of the cupped side facing up, is because because you are cold forging it, you are spreading the material and you're causing that to come back down. So real quick, Gamaco is on Instagram, Gamaco.artisan.supplies. Gamaco Artisan Supplies.
Yeah, cool. Those guys, Corin's a good dude. However, I said, no, you don't have to send me anything. He goes, suck shit, he said.
That's a good one. I'm going to remember that one.
That's a fucking strong thing to tell someone, but, you know, there you go. What are you going to do?
That's a good way to tell somebody to fuck off.
Suck it shit. I don't think he's telling me to fuck off. I think he's just like, regardless.
Saying, fuck you, I'm still sending it.
Yeah, fuck you, I'm still sending it. There you go. Little knife talk.
There we go. Okay, questions. Jmod Knives sent a question in via Instagram at Knife Talk Podcast on Instagram. He's DM'd us, and it says, what up, guys? So for Christmas, I gave my friend a really good deal on a chef's knife. Problems, all right. I can see where this is going. who's a cook at a high-end restaurant. He always wanted a knife but could never afford it. I've just wanted feedback from a real cook. He told me he wanted someone with a lot of rock to it. He even saw the blade in real life before the handle went on and loved it. He took it to work and told me it actually has too much rock to where it's wobbly when he's finely dicing. I told him that we could reprofile it, and he said, no problem, I'll give you $100 and don't mind helping. Is it fucked up to just have him do all the hand sanding? Let an outsider see what us knife makers have to go through. As always, love you all.
I think that's a great idea.
Yeah, that's not fucked up at all.
Not at all, exactly, yeah. He's going to pay you and do your hand sanding. I think that's the game, definitely. To be honest, I mean, there's nothing much else you could give them to do, really. I mean, they could watch you do something. Right. But, you know, what else could you give them to do, apart from the hand sanding, I suppose, so...
Here's what's going to happen.
Do it.
He's going to say, okay, great. You come in, and then the guy's going to show up. He's going to wear his clothes that he thinks are the correct clothes to wear. And then he's going to bullshit with you for 2 hours more than it would have taken you to fix the knife you're going to do. And he's not going to do a good job, and there's going to be J-hooks. And there's going to be, and he's going to hurt himself, or he's going to put one. Do you have something for my fingers? Like bandages? This is hard. and then there's gonna be something else. Hey, can't we just use the machine over there? And then he's gonna want to use that. And then he's gonna.
That's the whole point, though.
Well, just Yeah, take his money and make him work and tell him to shut up, too. And J-Mod, who is a fucking dynamite dude, tell him to shut up every so often. Give him the real story. Listen, too much lip, my man. My man. Keeps hand sanding. You give, what the fuck about these J-hooks?
I'd go full on, and I'd say, well, look, we can only do this on a full moon if it's a Wednesday.
Right.
And you know, get full on. Get him to face north when he's doing it and give him the full treatment. That's what I'd do. Okay. Who wants to take the next one?
I'll take the next one. Jeff, is that Jay supposed to be there? I'm looking at this. Okay.
I think that it's Madge Kick.
Okay.
It's not magic. He said it one time. He sent in how it's supposed to be pronounced, but I forgot how it's supposed to be pronounced.
Madge Kick Knives. I got a dilemma / question. So I recently got a knife back that I'd made for someone around 2 years ago. The customer asked me to fix up some edge damage, and I said I would. Upon receiving the knife, I realized the edge damage was quite substantial, significant rolling and some chipping of the edge, apparently done by breaking down a chicken. My first thought was that I had a bad heat treat, so I tested the undamaged parts of the edge by hitting them on the edge of the welding table. The damage from this was not even half as bad as what was on the rest of the knife. So I guess my dilemma question is, do you think chickens have suddenly mutated to have tungsten bones? That it's a case of bad heat treat, or they're trying to pull one over me because it's been some other misuse.
I think this is obviously a chef knife. If it is chipping and rolling, I'd say that it probably isn't the heat treat, simply because you probably have a super, super fine edge on there. So the only way that's going to happen is if it's being misused, you know. And you know, if it's a, he doesn't say what kind of chef knife, but you know, if it's a, you know, a standard sort of chef knife that you'd use for most things, you don't want to even be breaking bones with them, even if it's a chicken, you know. So I'd say it's a misuse, you know. You know, fix it if you like that, you know, that's completely fine. But you know, if you've done other tests on the knife and it seems fine, I wouldn't worry about your heat rate. You know, if it's not keeping it sharpness and all the rest of it, then I'd worry about the heat rate, particularly for a chef knife. But if a chef knife, personally, I think if it's chipping and rolling, I'd say that was more misuse than heat treat.
Yeah, I mean, his reaction is the exact same thing I would think. I would be like, oh, fuck, did I mess up the heat treat on this? And I would do the exact same. I would test it in some way to get an eye. I don't know if I would hit it against the edge of the welding table, but I keep a cutting board or, you know, there's plenty of scrap wood in the shop. And I like to impact, kind of just basically like I'm forging with a hammer, but instead I'm hitting the cutting edge against this wooden surface. That will tell me pretty quick if there's something wrong with my edge geometry or the heat treat. But it sounds like it wasn't, he doesn't, or the results from his little test, he doesn't think it's a heat treat. My guess is not only is he probably abusing the knife in some weird way, but cutting on a surface, cutting surfaces are really important. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people mistakenly think that because they've spent a lot of money on a knife, that it's fucking indestructible. They've seen too many Ginsu knife fucking infomercials or whatever, right? And the reality is, like, you cannot cut on ceramic, you can't cut on glass, you can't cut on other metal or in a cooking pan and expect things to stay great, because the edge of the knife, while your steel is really hard, you have a really sharp edge, the micro serrations and the teeth, the actual cutting at bevel, is very fragile. It can be very fragile, especially when it comes in contact with the wrong shit. And so my guess is that he was not cutting on the right. Not only was he breaking down a chicken, probably with a knife that he shouldn't have been using. For a knife that's meant for breaking down chicken, you want a little bit more of a robust geometry. That's why boning knives exist, and that's why meat cutting knives and other kind of cleavers and butchering cleavers and shit like that exist. But that's also because they have a different geometry. They're not just necessarily different steel, they're different geometry, so they can withstand that kind of impact. Most of the cooking knives that we're making are not meant for that kind of impact. They're meant for cutting vegetables, fruits, and boneless meat, which covers a lot of stuff. But anyways, so probably used the wrong knife for the breaking down the chicken, number one. Number two, he's probably using the wrong surface. So when I send my knives out, I always send out a care sheet, and fucking people are lazy and they don't read stuff. But at least for me and my peace of mind, I've sent something that says, do not cut on, you know, glass trivets. You know, these trivets are, I don't know, like I remember for a long time people were – they were being sold as cutting boards. Mm. They are not cutting boards. They're
it's amazing how many people I see with one of those glass things they think is a cutting
board.
Or
they like
cut everything on it. Right. Yeah, it's crazy.
I've also seen like little marble, again, they're trivets or like presentation boards, but they are not cutting boards. You could cut cheese on it with a cheese knife that doesn't actually have an edge. But you don't want to use a good kitchen knife, especially a custom handmade, high expensive, whatever knife on a fucking piece of marble or in a cast iron pan or on, you know, a ceramic platter or whatever the guy was using to cut this thing was probably not the right surface to be working on either. So if you fix it, hit them up and be like, yo, just to remind you, you should only be using this knife on, well, if it's only designed for if the geometry is only meant for certain things, then say whatever those certain things are. But also that it should be on plastic, either some sort of synthetic plastic cutting surface, for especially for raw foods or raw meat, or like wood, but none of the other crap, because all of that shit is gonna fuck up your knife real fucking quick.
Yeah, what do you think, Jeff?
I think it's a you guys did it perfectly. I mean, I think it's it gave me time to come up with a different scenario. I think the guys who brought the knife back is completely full of shit. Not only did he use the wrong, I mean, if you're breaking down a chicken, I watched this video, this guy on Instagram is Yakitori guy, and he uses one of them chicken knives, and he explained how the different ways to break down chickens for yakitori and different, and I've broken down chickens and all that shit. The only time I'm ever cutting through a bone is I'm cutting off the heel or the ankle, above the ankle, above the wishbone, above the drumstick. Other than that, where are you hit? At what point do you ever hit bone? Or, you know, you go through cartilage, you go through, you know, you go through the joint between the thigh and the leg, or maybe you're going to bust through the spine, but it's like, this fucking guy didn't do it right. He did something wrong. He did something wrong. It ain't your knife. Whatever you guys said, I agree with you 100%. These are bullshit.
And the reason I bring up the improper cutting surface is because I have seen people, either like a video or seen it, people at their own houses have like a 13-by-9-inch baking dish, and they're doing the work of the chicken inside. They're trying to be good. They're trying to contain all the like the raw chicken juices and shit, right? They're trying to keep it in a clean space. You don't want to cut on glass, or if it's stoneware, whatever it is, even if it's a, like a little sheet metal baking dish pan thing, you don't want to be cutting on that. It's terrible. It's terrible.
And then I would think, now if you were to chop off from the ankle up of the chicken bone, you'd be using the heel. You wouldn't be using the tip of the knife. So if the damage was on the heel, okay. But if the damage was somewhere else, guy's full of shit. That's what I have to say. Well, we did it. Oh, speaking of which, by the way, you said in the beginning when you said the guy's name, Madge Kick Knives. Okay. I want to say one thing. Last week we were making jokes on the Ball Beef Review. Not making jokes, but the guy's name was Berg. You were saying Berg Fark. Remember that? Remember Berg Fark? And then you said, Craig, you were making it sound like you were saying, you know, something else. I made the mistake. His name is not Berg Fark. It's Berg Falk. F-A-L-K, not R-A-R-K.
Falk.
Yeah, Falk. Okay. So, shout out to Mr. Berg Falk.
Okay.
There you go.
Who's taking the next?
Stu Lin says, Stu Lin's from Australia, good dude. Question for all three of you little bastards. What's the best decision you made for your business? Good ass question right there. Good ass question.
Yeah. I saw that question. I was giving that some thought while Marika was answering the last. I would say, personally, for me, it is getting Blank's laser cut. Because that has given me a whole new sort of customer, which is now restaurants. And it's just, yeah, I can just work faster. You know, obviously matching sets of sort of 15 knives and so on. They're all identical. It just completely changed my business, basically. Not as profitable, obviously. But I get consistent numbers, and yeah, it just changed everything. Whilst we're on the subject, if you're interested in laser cutting or water jetting knives, or even designing them with CAD, stay tuned next week. We've got a new sponsor that could maybe help.
Ooh.
All right.
Have mercy.
Have mercy.
So what's the best decision you made for your business?
Me?
You.
Okay. I will say it was actually, what was it? A little over a year ago now, I transitioned from doing all custom orders to taking no orders. I do recognize that I'm in a special position to be able to do that, to make that kind of pivot. I don't think it's a thing that is either people are capable of doing or is a good idea for people to do. But I had to change the business model and the way that we were taking orders, or not even necessarily taking orders, but the way we were selling knives and selling work. And so for me, I was really struggling with the stress and the frustration of the custom order list and the constant delays and the internal stress and frustration I was feeling towards myself, feeling like I was letting these people down and disappointing them, or if there's a delay, like the stress of having to start over and that delaying a payday, and you know, I got bills to pay at home. It was too much and I had to change things. And so fortunately I was in the position that I could pivot to cancel all those orders and transition to a newsletter model, where basically I make something, I put it out in a newsletter, somebody says they're interested and they buy it. And it's been really great for me and my mental health and managing stress and being able, honestly, to plan for what I'm building or what else we got going on. Last year, I started doing a lot more teaching stuff and doing more demonstrations. That was part of kind of changing up that structure of doing only customs too. And it's been good, and I'm very thankful that I finally had made that decision. I probably really should have done it a long time before that, so it didn't get to a point that was like basically a breaking point for me. And so I'm glad I did that. And that is probably the best decision. I keep wanting to say decision, but anyways, decision I made for the business.
There you go. Newsletters definitely rock. Yeah, that's good.
It's good. It's definitely anything to get you less stress is nice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Without question, this was easy for me. It was making the decision that I can't do this alone and I need help from a just new set of eyes. And having my business partner, Tony, who's like one of my closest friends, known him 20 plus years. We worked together for a long time before become my business partner, was the best decision I ever made. And it's like, he's come up with ideas, and not to mention, not just like I got a business partner who owns part of the company where he's a yes man. He tells me how he feels. He tells me what I'm doing, where we're going, and I trust him. And I also allow myself to not have to micromanage him. I don't micromanage his ideas. I rarely say, the only time I ever said no to him, it was a funny thing, he wanted to get red shirts with gold sparkles. And I was like, I'm not paying for red shirts with gold sparkles. You can forget it. He's like, oh, now all of a sudden you say no. And even his mom called me up. She goes, you know, I think that the idea about the red shirts with gold sparkles is a great idea. I'm like, Mrs. Iazzi, come on, please. Leave me alone. But other than that, it's been by a mile the best decision I ever made. Mm-hmm. He gives me confidence. He also, it's not a relationship where we make decisions that are based on personal decisions, like, It's not my wife. Not that there's anything wrong with that. But I mean, my wife, if my wife was my, we were partners, she would be making me make decisions based on things that were not, you know, were not long-term. They'd be short-term. And Tony comes up with these ideas that are very long-term. And it's like, and I trust him. And it's not easy for people to do. And it's not, you know, like you were saying, Craig, it's not profitable sometimes because, you know, he gets a cut. He owns part of the company. But it's by a mile, the best decision I ever made was offering him partnership in the company.
Right.
By a mile.
Nice. Still waiting for him to be on Full Blast with you so we can hear more of that sort of story as well.
Tony is, you know, Tony's a fucking awesome dude. And he's also, he has a small company that is in Southeast Asia. So he's there a lot. And it's an accounting company. And it's hard to get him pinned down every so often. And he wants to podcast. He used to do a podcast called the Overseasoned Podcast, which was awesome. Yeah. I loved it. The problem was it was too hard for him and the business. And during the pandemic, his business went from like incredible to really not incredible. So he had to figure out ways in which to make his company, you know, this other company a little bit more. It's hard to get him. I want to get him back on Full Blast. He's got an open invitation. I love Tony. Tony's the best.
Nice.
He's coming tomorrow.
Cool.
So we're excited because I tell you, we're doing a brand new set of knives, and I've got three designs that I love, and it's not a departure. It's very thoughtful, and it works with the confines of what I've been doing, and it's exciting. And he's coming down. We're gonna have some fun. So it's been great.
Cool.
Nice.
Cool. Okay, those are all good decisions. Another good decision is
Combat Abrasives makes the world's best abrasive belts for knife makers, available in any size at unbelievable prices. Go take a look at combatabrasives.com and get 15% off with promo code KNIFETALK15.
Do it now. Great decision. Use Combat Abrasives. Okay, let's do a few more questions. James Watson Knives. Oh, sorry, no. Brigham Kindle first. Hey, man, can I ask you a question? If you're doing a hidden tang and have a blowout, do you spend time trying to fix it or just rip the handle off and start over? If you try to fix it, what's your go-to move? Now, this confused me. I don't do hidden tangs, so I don't really know what a blowout is. What would that be?
I would assume, and obviously we would need more context to know specifically what he's asking about, but I have in my knife making doing hidden tangs, especially when I'm doing the bedded fit up, which we talked about a couple episodes back, but basically where you're doing a 100% like super tight fit so that you can take the handle off later and then maybe work it separately from the rest of the blade or a guard or something like that. And putting things back together, sometimes there can be some hydraulic pressure that makes things really challenging for actually putting things back together. And I have had, usually it's been burl or sometimes spalted wood. But you know, you might have already gone through some of the sculpting and everything like that. And then when you go to do the final glue up somewhere along the way, or it could just naturally exist in the material, there's a crack that you didn't see or anticipate. And when you're doing that final glue up, and if there's a lot of pressure in there, it can actually cause it to blow apart. And I've had that happen actually a couple times, which is part of the reason I stopped doing the bedded tang fit up. But also an adaptation for that was to cut channels into the sidewalls of the tang slot, the bedded tang slot, so that that pressure that
somewhere to go,
that had somewhere to flow out of, basically. But so it's still, like
hydraulic pressure, and you push it down.
Yep, exactly.
Okay, gotcha.
And
okay.
So, yeah. But you still maintain a good fit up and, you know, engagement with the tang, so that everything still lines up perfectly. It's just you get rid of that issue with the hydraulic pressure. So. In my experience with those, I've had to start over. I just took the handle right back off because ideally, you know, you get it on there and you're happy. You clamped or it's clamped or maybe in the process of getting it on there, the handle breaks. And before the glue sets back up, I just rip it back off. because there's no way from the times it's happened to me, there's no way to work around it. I'm not going to like slather on some glue and then try to glue it back together for some like bullshit piecemeal handle construction. That doesn't feel good to me. I don't feel confident in that. So I just start over.
So it's a big fuck, pull it off, throw it at the wall, go for a walk and come back and redo it. Okay. Yeah.
See, the way I read it was he was making a hidden tang knife, but it was the handle was curved, not like a straight, like wah style handle where it's like a cylinder. Like it had, you know, convexity, almost not a convexity, but like a gripped handle, like a pistol grip. So when he was drilling, he drilled through, bedded the tang, and then when he's carving through the bottom where your fingers go for a chopper. All of a sudden, you see that glue spot. That's happened to me.
I have done that too, yeah.
Yeah, so that's what I assumed. And I tell you what I used to do when I make mistakes, and I still do the same thing. A lot of time, and this is crazy, I'll think, can I fix this? And I've been down this road where you're trying to, I've been down this road when I used to do railings, when I'm trying to fix something and I'm welding and I'm grinding and I'm welding, adding more weld and I'm grinding and I'm just like making a wreck of it. With knife handles, if I look at it for more than 5 seconds, I'll just touch it on the bandsaw. And I'll be like, okay, I got to get rid of it anyway. So I'll fucking just like, I don't want to think about it anymore. So I'll ruin it intentionally because I'm like, I know that I'll spend an extra 4 hours trying to make something not right. But like right now I'm doing 8 prototypes. And I'm fooling around, and they're not perfect. I'm working on fit-ups and working on this and the other thing, and I'm letting them ride because these aren't going to be for sale. And I'm just like, I know, all right, these – and I'm going through all these different, like, stages of, all right, well, I got to be aware of this when I'm doing them for real. So I'm, like, actually kind of going through all the mistakes that I would make and make sure I can figure out how I can counter those mistakes when I'm fabricating them on the real. So it's kind of cool. But my move is like, unless it's really not, if it's, you don't salvage, just start over. It's not the end of the world.
It's happened to me, I think only twice, I believe. The one time that really stands out to me was the first time this ever happened to me. And it was a $250, like exhibition, like 5A grade Koa handle material. And the block was an oversized block, and the customer ordered a matching set of a chef's knife handle and a paring knife handle. And both handles came out of this block, but there was no extra, basically. And I fucked up the handle on the chef, and that was exactly what happened. I was going in and cleaning up where the pinky rests in the handle, and I went too deep, and I got into that kind of like that tang slot area full of glue, and I could see a big difference. I was like, at first, I was like, what the fuck is that? That's a weird thing in the wood. And it dawned on me that I had fucked up and gone too deep. And for that one, I told the customer immediately what was happening, and the options ahead. And I said, either I can try to patch this, or I can start over and find a different piece of wood or try to get another one. And they had also, like some collectors will buy handle material or even steel sometimes and say, I would love to use this on my custom build. And she had been sitting on this block of wood for 3 years, just waiting for the right project. And I fucked it up. And that is some of the stress and frustration, by the way, I'm talking about that fucking kills me when it comes to custom orders. But anyways, I patched it. It was at least at the time a pretty good patch job. That's what she wanted to do because it was a very special handle material. I have no idea what it looks like. She doesn't live far from me, so I should try to get a hold of it and look at it again.
Don't do it. Don't do it. Just let her. But, let her fucking.
I hate doing that and anymore. Like, well, I'm not taking custom orders anymore. But I only a couple more times after that, I had customers send me handle material that they wanted me to use. And it scared the fuck out of me. One of them, it took me 8 months to approach like the handle glue up, like just the handle assembly. And then I started sculpting the handle, and I was just too anxious to keep going. So I stopped and I set it down for like 6 months, and I worked on other shit, but I couldn't, like, if I was too full of anxiety to do that. That was part of why I was like, I can't do this anymore. It's too much. It was just killing me. And so, yeah.
I just got some wood from go ahead.
What I was going to say, if you need some handle material, you can head on over to maritimeknifesupply.com. Because as well as handle material, they've also got steel, belts, tools, forges, kilns, and much, much more. Based in Canada, they're actually the Canadian distributor for combat abrasives as well. So you will get that 10% off if you buy a 10-pack as well, which is cool. Also sell Rhinowet and all the rest of it. They are maritimeknifesupply.com and maritimeknifesupply on Instagram. Go take a look.
Lawrence did me a solid when I was at Maker Camp. The knife I just finished, I was talking about at the top of the episode, I actually started at Maker Camp, and Lawrence Lake of Maritime Knife Supply brought me a beautiful piece of Arizona ironwood to use for that build, and it came out great in the finished product.
Nice.
Yeah.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big money on new windows now at Menards. Update your home with vinyl windows from Jeld-Wen. They're durable, energy efficient, and are low maintenance. Menards carries over 100 different size and style options in stock, ready to take home today. Save big on Jeld-Wen windows in store, or view our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more window deals happening this week now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Nice. Okay, we've been nearly an hour already, so let's zip through a couple more questions, see what else we've got. We all pick a question each. I've got James Watson Knives.
We also have lots of listener feedback.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, cool. We'll get to that then. Yeah, okay, cool. James Watson Knives. Hello, love the show. May I ask, what class do you recommend on forging knives in the UK? UK. I know Alex Pohl was doing classes, but I know they've recently moved, so I'm not sure if they still got the facility there to be able to do classes. And I'm just looking on his website, actually, and I can't seem to see anything. But I'd say drop him a line, because if he doesn't, he'll know who would be best to speak to in the UK. So Alex Pohl is in the sort of Bath area, so quite easy to get to from anywhere in the UK, really. Great guy, and even if you just want to look at pictures of old dirty hands, go take a look at his website. It's just full of pictures of dirty hands. It's like a fetish site. It's quite amazing.
He's a fucking big dude. I'll give it to you.
He is.
He'll give you a shitty cup of coffee, right?
Well, that was Steve. Yeah, oh, was yeah. Steve, but okay. But yeah, Alex. I know he did courses, and he had a great facility there. But I said he has moved. But yeah, get in touch with alexpohlironwork.com, because if he doesn't, he'll certainly know who would be best to contact. That's what I'd say in the UK.
You could also check with Hereford College, which is a big blacksmithing school in the UK, which is, you know, internationally well known. And then there's also the UK version of Abana, which is called BABA. But British Artist Blacksmith Association, BABA. The fucking BABA rules. Listen, I remember seeing some stuff from BABA back in the day, and I was just like, I wish Abana was more like BABA. BABA fucking rules. So I would definitely get a hold of BABA.
There we go, yeah. Baba.
Also,
get a hold of Baba might be the name of might be the name of this episode.
Get Baba a hold Bing.
Baba Bing.
It might be worth checking out the boys over at Blenheim Forge too.
Oh yeah, good one.
I think
good call.
Occasionally they either have open houses or teach lessons or do or if anything, have a good resource. In fact, actually, it just hit me. Owen Bush is a maker in the UK. Mm. He's a very talented bladesmith and blacksmith, and he definitely teaches classes as well as hosts other teachers teaching classes. I've actually talked to him about getting over there to doing some classwork over in the UK. We'll see where that goes. But he is a neat guy, and he does some good shit. So Owen Bush would also be another great resource to hit up.
And Toby Morrell, UK Ooh. Knife Supplies, he was teaching classes, and if he do, and he's very in the know of what's going on over the UK. He used to be in Australia, now he's in the UK. Toby Morrell, give him a call. If he doesn't know, he probably will tell you where to go. So anyway, that was pretty fucking helpful, ladies and gentlemen.
It was, yeah. Wow, yeah,
really helpful, dudes.
I'm just looking through Alex's website again here. It is basically a fetish site for people who like dirty hands.
Dang.
It really is.
Dang. Dang.
It's crazy. Okay, let's move on. You guys.
Yeah, Nash Knives is asking, DA, dual action Sanders for sanding blades? Yes or no? I don't know. Mm. I don't know what that means.
DA sander. So imagine a palm sander.
Okay.
But besides the fact that, you know, one of those palm sanders where you take a square of sandpaper and then you cut it in four and then you wrap it on the other side, okay, a DA sander is it gives you a non-directional finish. So dual action. So what happens is you're
like
moving
it's oscillating.
Yeah. So in the fabrication world, we use DA. You can create a non-directional finish. So you'd use a DA sander. The best DA sanders are the ones on pneumatic. And they fit in your palm, and then they'll oscillate, and you're moving them, and then you end up with a very it's a non-directional finish, but it doesn't look like a belt, like a regular palm sander finish. It's actually an awesome finish for outside stuff and stuff like that. But yeah. I actually used that back in the day to make a mirror finish, because that's how we used to do mirror finish. We used to do a DA sanders, you got 220, 420, 500, 800, 900, right, you know, and that's how you got the mirror. But you can...
Is that French?
No, you know what? I never told you about mirror. So I work with these guys from Ecuador and Colombia, and they were awesome. They were incredible. And then we would be having to do all these like non-directional finishes and brass finishes and mirror finishes, and they'd always call it mirror. And I liked it. I like calling it mirror better. Hey, we have to make some mirror. And then they're also the same guys who would say before we leave for an installation, they would mash up American expressions, and they would say "speak now or shut up forever," which is my favorite expression of all time. So "speak now or shut up forever." So,
yeah. I was thinking when I saw dual action sanders, I was thinking, I don't know if you've seen them. In Thiers, there's a bunch of knife making factories, and I've had a few tours of them to see their setups and that kind of thing. But they had like almost like buffing wheels. But when you have a buffing wheel sort of facing you, like coming down towards you, these were two buffing wheels that were sort of side by side. So imagine Danielson doing his wax on, wax off. You know, they're running that way. But there was a tiny gap in between, and you'd actually put the blade in between two buffing wheels, so it would buff either side to get like a mirror finish that way. But if you put it in too far, obviously they'd just grip the knife and they'd kill it. It would be dangerous as hell.
Yeah.
So I assumed that's what you meant when you had dual action, as in two wheels.
That's actually what I pictured too. Because I know the guys over at New West, where Ashley Childs used to work, they have a similar setup with, I think it's not only the belt or blade grinders, but also for the buffing, cleaning.
Yeah.
There's a guy. This I like this guy very much. He's become friendly. He's this Brazilian guy. His name is Don Cassio Selamian. Selaimen. Don Cassio Selamian. He's fucking nuts. But he's my favorite mental patient of all time, because he makes these gaucho knives. And he, I think he's like a dentist in his you know, full-time job, but he makes these, you know, gaucho knives. And he has two grinders with contact wheels, big 9-inch contact wheels. One's going one direction, one's going the other. And he fucking puts them right up against each other, and he pulls it out, turns them both on, pulls it all out, and he makes that fucking hollow grind in like a couple passes. And it looks like a fucking guy's going to kill himself. I love this dude. He always... These Brazilians are, I don't know if he's Argentina or Brazilian, he's fucking awesome. And they have these like indoor barbecue pits, and he does all this Brazilian style cooking, and he's always tagging me when he's like going to these big events. But down in Brazil, he's the fucking man. But that's what he has. He does these knives, and he has them machined. I don't know, you got to go deep in his feed, but he is a fucking awesome follow because he's always in his kitchen blowing a trumpet, and then he's like fucking fire in his house, and then cooking Brazilian barbecue in his thing, and he goes, fader knives, and then they obrigado, obrigado, and all this bullshit. It's fucking awesome.
Wow. Thinking about it, I could see that working if you have to do the two grinders going in opposing directions, but instead of putting the knife in from the top, you raise it up from the bottom.
I think that's what he does. Okay. I don't think he's dropping it.
I could see
it.
That being a lot safer.
With the tip up, with the edge up. Yeah, I don't think he's dropping it. I think you're dropping it down. I mean, I think you're fucking asking for Mondo trouble. But like,
for sure.
You could probably figure out a way if you had like a chase way on the bottom. Like, all right, so you have your two contact wheels. They're like close. And then you could probably raise a little plate on the bottom where the spine of your knife is like riding. So you're not in this position, but fuck that shit. I would have like I would have a vice grip, and I'd be standing 9 feet away. That's actually how we used to do Maror. We had on the buffing wheels were these monsters, and then we would take these 2x4s, like 6 feet long, and mount whatever we had to do on Maror onto the 2x4, and then
I do all my buffing on a 2x4.
And well, but we're like 6 feet away, and then we had a couple like a leverage point where we could kind of like pull down on the 2x4, so it was in that heavy duty buffing wheel, and there was really no way for us to get it pulled out of our hands or sent off. Mm. But we were far away. That's what I would do. Far away.
Yeah. You know, I've looked at because I have a palm sander at my shop, a random orbital sander. Is what I remember calling them when I was in high school.
Yeah.
And I was like, I wonder if I could hand sand a blade with this. You obviously wouldn't want to finish there. You could, but you could get like through probably 220 and maybe even 400.
100%.
And then you finish with 400 grit strokes.
That's what we were doing. I mean, that's what I was doing in the beginning. I mean, that's how we would get. You can get a mirror finish with a non-direct you were saying an oscillating non-directional finish. You can do mirror finish with a palm sander, with a oscillating palm sander. You can get the, you know, a palm, you know, we talk about this all the time. Hand sanding is taking off the peaks and getting down the valleys. You want to get down the valleys, go use a goddamn palm sander. What's the difference?
Yeah.
Oh, look how helpful.
Some Rhino Wet from Indasa. It's going to save you money. It's going to save you time. We all use Rhino Wet. It's the best stuff. And you can get it from TexasFarrierSupply.com. They sell a lot, everything you could possibly need, whether you're a knife maker, a farrier. But yeah, they sell in Dasa as well. So go take a look, TexasFarrierSupply.com. Fill up your cart and use Knife Talk 10, and you'll get 10% off. And when you finish, take your cart back to the corral, please.
Fuck it. If you're doing the palm sander, you could, especially the vibrating, like the electric vibrating ones with the square shape, you can use your fucking Rhino Wet for that too.
Well, if you want, you get a good. You can get those oscillating. Those most of the, like
they
I said,
sell
those.
The discs,
those
right.
Well, no. You can. Here's what you do, because you're buying the discs is for suckers. What you do is you get one of the. You can get them. The pneumatic ones have a foam, a pad, like a heavy foam pad, and then you just get some spray adhesive, and then you get, and then, you know, you cut your Rhino Wet up so it fits that oscillating disc, this disc sander, and then you cut the rest and use it for hand sanding. Bingo, bango, bongo.
Baba.
Oh, we have listener feedback.
We've got listener feedback, you say, yeah.
Yeah, so, guys, if you're listening to this and you want to interact with the show, follow us on Instagram, Knife Talk Podcast on Instagram. That's where you can DM us stuff. You can write in. Last week was the All Beef Review. Got a lot of great feedback from the All Beef Review. And the first one is the first listener feedback is from Matt Lab. Oh, and don't forget, I have a new bit. We have a new bit that we got to do. Let me forget. So the first listener feedback comes from Matt Lav. Here's some listener feedback. I've been listening to you guys for years in the workshop, learning a lot about what different knife parts and processes are. I love knives since I was a kid fishing with my granddad and always been amazed at blacksmithing. So after a long time of me harping on my wife, my wife surprised me with blacksmith sessions. Blacksmith session at a local forge to learn some of the basics to eventually build enough skills to attempt a blade. Basically, nice. I want to say thank you for doing this week in and week out through all the computer bullshit you have to face and inspiring, influencing me to finally swing a hammer at some steel. P.S. If Cypress Karen has to send their knowledge back, I need as much as I can get, so send it to my address. Cypress in the Perfect. Morning. Send it to fucking Matt Lav. Cypress in the morning. So God bless you, Matt Lav. Thanks for listening and give him hell. Have a good time. Enjoy yourself.
Yeah, good luck. Good luck.
Paul Jansen writes, the beef is always my favorite episode of the year. The All Beef Review is always my favorite episode of the year, and this year was no exception. Almost had to pull over. I was laughing so hard at don't take a shit, you give a shit. That's what Uri Hockey says. He didn't like American English. Don't take a shit, give a shit. So thank you, Paul, for all your help. Plumlee Knives says, another great All Beef Review podcast. Cheers from Cyprus. Plumlee Knives, Cyprus in the morning, baby. Mammoth Creek Knives says, I just showed my future wife the music video from Craig. Both of us were impressed as fuck. Well done, sir. Mm. And thank you for putting that out there. You are very talented. Love the podcast and all your immense talent. You guys always inspire me in unintentional ways. So that was a nice thing to say.
What music video is that again?
This town. This town will bring you down.
It's almost like a behind the scenes of the studio, basically. Yeah.
I just want to make it clear for anybody who might not know.
This town.
Okay.
Available on Spotify and available, wherever. Yeah. Streaming services are This Town by
any
Craig Lockwood.
Bargain bucket CD outlet too. Yeah.
So some people send us messages saying that we're too locker room and the dick jokes are whatever and stuff like that. And I just want to tell you, all the listener feedback, the most listener feedback we got is what was, we were talking last week about what a chode is. I think that we didn't know what a chode is. Well,
yeah.
I want to thank Littleton Supply Company, Kyle Furlman, Roddy Filman, Red Knives, Leonardo Lee, in explaining to me what I'm going to send them all. You're all in the same boat, and I'm not going to read all your fucking chode stories. So a chode, apparently a chode is a wiener or a penis. If you want to be more scientific, a penis that's very short. And extremely wide.
Oh, okay.
So you got a hockey puck glued to your guts.
There's a little Danny DeVito down there. Okay.
You got a little fucking nub, but I want to thank. So just to let you know, the chode's conversation really struck a nerve. Thank you to the guys for clearing me up. This is as much DMs about penises as I can handle. EDC Gearhouse says.
Wait a second. The chode thing, by the way, when we were recording last week and I said what I said and we moved on, I was like, wait a second, is that right? And I double-checked it, and the second definition was the perineum. And when I was growing up, which is the taint, growing up, in middle, whenever somebody would call somebody a chode, I was like, for a long time, I was like, what the fuck is a chode? And they're like, it's the spot between your dick bag and your asshole.
Craig, do you know why they call it the taint? Have you ever heard of it called the taint before?
I've heard it called the taint. I don't know why they call it.
Do you know why?
No.
Because it taint your ass, and it taint your nuts, and it taint good for nothing. You didn't know that? It's true. I didn't make that shit up. And then there's the gooch. We know that from Australia. They call
it
the gooch.
We know the gooch, yes.
Right. EDC
there's
Gear.
There's a famous cricketer called Graham Gooch. When I was growing up, and it made me laugh every time his name was mentioned on the TV. Graham Gooch.
Oh, there's some bad names out there, aren't there? There was a baseball player whose name was Rusty Kuntz. K-U-N-T-Z. K-U-N-T-Z. Kuntz. Rusty Kuntz. Oh, I wanted that baseball card so bad, you have no idea. EDC Gearhouse says, all beef review is epic. I always appreciate the knife life feedback, the knife talk feedback and advice, but something about hearing you guys shoot the shit is the best. Happy New Year to you three, and we look forward to staying tuned, in tune to the podcast.
Happy New Year.
Nice. Happy New Year. We can keep going, or we can do something else, or whatever you want. I have more listener feedback.
We have
a new bit, so we have to get back into the new bit. So the John Lewis wrote, greetings. First, I want to thank you for what you do. When I look around my shop and consider my knife-making journey, y'all are right there with me, whether it's the recommendation for the Broadbeck grinder, or the Even Heat, or the deep dive into coffee treatment, or the tutorial on serrations, or the real science provided by Dr. Laren Thomas. My journey has been heavily influenced by the show. A few shows ago, Jeff described himself as a therapist. It's so true. For me to hear that, I'm not the only one who holds their breath during electro etch or can't get a good finish off the belts. It's quite soothing. Many thanks, and keep the therapy sessions going. As long as you're doing what you do, I'll be listening. It was very nice, John Lewis. Nice. So, Littleton Supply Company. You got to follow Littleton Supply Company. He's a funny, funny guy. He writes, hey guys, another great episode. One thing that would be worth sharing for a budget Kydex press is that you can use a t-shirt press and replace the foam with Kydex molding foam. It's a great way to add versatility to a tool some makers already have in their arsenal. Also, I would like to petition that penis talk about Craig is referred to as Lockwood's Cockwood. Merry non-denominational, non-binary, non-offensive holiday season, and happy new year, fellas. So
Lockwood's Cockwood. Okay. I mean, okay.
It's fine. That's pretty much it.
Okay. So. Well, I'll tell you what. Let's take this time for Mareko to tell everybody all about his favorite grinder.
Well, we just talked about it, or mentioned it at least. Mr. John Lewis mentioned the Broadbeck grinder. Broadbeck grinders are fucking grinders made for makers by makers. They understand what you're going through and the struggles, and so they've designed a machine that is multiple machines in one. You got a surface grinder, you got a disc sander, you got a slack belt sander, you got all kinds of different machines. You got a buffing machine all in one. They work cross-platform. You can bring tool arms to them, to their chassis, or you can take their tool arms and put them on other chassis. They'll even work with you to make sure things get fit up properly. It's great. They're great guys. I was just messaging with Vince earlier, and he's doing great. And it's nice to have people who care about us in this community and that help, you know, very thoughtfully put together machines and tools that help us accomplish the work that we're trying to accomplish as easily and as we possibly can. And Broadbeck is one of those companies who's really making a difference in helping us get the work done. So if you go to I still don't have the notes on the discounts, but it's Knife Talk 200 and Knife Talk 100. They'll save you money on stuff at checkout. Do you got the notes, Jeff? Yeah.
Knife Talk 200 off a grinder package, okay. And Knife Talk 100 off the leather sewing machine, the
surface grinder,
knife sharpening system,
okay,
and the surface grinder.
Okay.
And side note, Vince seems to think he and I are going to have a paella challenge. He seems to think that his paellas are better than mine. So someday, well, he says we're going to cook together. I'm like, eh. You can be the champion. I don't need that designation. You know what I'm saying? I'm on my own path, man. I'm on my own path.
On that note, we have got a message from another new sponsor. Bear with me just a second. Didn't work.
Do you want me to start the new bit and then you can try it again?
It was purely a joke, but I'll try again.
Can't begin my day until I've had a dick and cider.
There's nothing better than waking up to a good old dick and cider.
My girlfriend loves dick and cider. My sister came to stay with us for a month, and my husband couldn't go a day without a Dickens cider. More guilt-free love, a Dickens cider!
If you're a cider drinker, Dickens cider. Knife Talk 10 for 10% off. Okay, what else do
you
have?
You sent me that thing, and I was just like, these Australians, man, they go for the lowest hanging fruit they can find.
That's good, though.
Dickens cider. Give me a break. It's like back in the day, this radio show was so proud of themselves because they came up with this fake ad for a sofa company called Sofa King. So they were saying on, you know, regular radio, sofa king this and sofa king that, and they thought they were very proud of themselves. It was pretty
weird. We had there was a coughs and colds remedy in the UK, and the ad would always say, for coughs and colds try Rennie's. And as a kid, it was the funniest thing ever.
I tell you what the funniest UK commercial I ever heard was these two old ladies sitting at a park bench. And one of them turns to the other and she says, do you fancy a finger? And she says, I totally fancy a finger. And he gave her a Kit Kat. Hey, Esther, I always fancy a finger. And it was a fucking Kit Kat commercial.
A cheeky finger. We talked about this in the past, haven't we?
Yeah. Thanks for asking. I always appreciate a fucking finger.
I may
finger.
Have asked my mother-in-law if she fancied a cheeky finger.
I heard that. That was something else. That was something else, Lockwood. Jesus.
Oh, congratulations, by the way. I saw that you guys just celebrated 15 years. You and your wife.
Oh, yes, together. Like, yes, yeah, not married. Since we met. It was New Year's Eve. It was our first sort of date.
Wow.
15 years ago. Yeah, and my wife found this picture of us around that time. And we're both unrecognizable.
You guys look like yourself.
Haggard since then, but 15 years. Wow. Well, I speak for myself. My wife still looks beautiful, obviously, but yeah, I look pretty haggard. Yeah. Talking about beautiful things, if you need something special to make something special for a special someone, or you're just looking to make a very special piece, you wouldn't go wrong using Dharma Steel. Dharmasteel.se is the website. Go take a look. They make a stainless Damascus, beautiful, beautiful patterns. They got them all there on the website. They're also Dharma Steel Lab on Instagram, so you can have a look at the kind of stuff people are making with it. If you go to the website and register and make a purchase using Knife Talk as a promo code, you'll get 10% off too. So go take a look. They're good, good people too. Go take a look. Dharmasteel.se.
So I have a new bit that I want to start.
Yes, let's do it.
Okay, yeah. So I kind of did a preview last year, and it's a new bit. And what you, the listener, are going to do is you're going to send us on Instagram, Knife Talk Podcast on Instagram, something that happens in your shop that you do, and you just don't know why it's happening. And we're going to call it, why me, why does this always happen to me? Okay? And we're going to try to CSI what's happening, because it happens all the time. I see stuff. Yeah. There's stuff that you can work out. You say, God, for some reason I always do this, or why am I always getting these J hooks, or why am I always getting this, you know, not just a question of like how should I do this, but like this happens to me and I never know why. So we're going to do that. The first one is Legacy Blades, and Legacy Blades sent this in as a question, but it seemed perfectly fitting for why me, why does this always happen to me. And that's a Howard Stern thing. Why me, all this crap. All right. Legacy Blade says, how do you guys get out the wiggles if you get them in your grind line? I've had a few in the last few weeks in different blades, and it's maddening to try to work them out. I'm wondering what steps you take to attack them. I'm pretty sure the guy that said insanity is doing the same thing over and over again is expecting a different result. Must be grinding a knife. Thanks for all what you do. So what I said to him was like, can you give me an example of what you're talking about? He goes, like a high spot or a wave in the grind line where you're trying to even them out. Does that make sense?
Yes. We're talking like in a camp knife, that kind of thing, where you have your grind line clearly showing, not on a chef knife where the grind line generally goes right up to the spine. He's talking, that kind of grind, I assume.
He's chasing. It's like you know, you're chasing back and forth, like you're kind of...
Yeah, for me, whenever I was having that problem, it was normally because I was being too careful. If you commit to it and put a fair bit of pressure down, you generally get a crisper edge. and you can you get a nice short straight line. But yeah, when I was trying to do things to sort of feather in to try and chase things and fix things, it just made the problem worse and you're always chasing your tail. So I think it's just a case of being confident, applying a bit of pressure and going for it.
Hmm. Well, what other things could be the problem? Does that happen to me when I did the Knife Talk build along? I was like, I couldn't get everything. I had to go back and forth and back and forth. And the plunge line ended up, the flats ended up being like very thin as opposed to what it's supposed to be. Mm. What do you think, Marco? Yeah.
I mean, sharp belts will make a massive difference. And I think when I've struggled with my grinds and getting them or controlling kind of where the belt's grinding and stuff like that, it's because I'm trying to get too much or more work out of a belt than it's capable of actually doing. And I notice almost immediately, I swap out for a new belt, I start grinding away, and there's no fucking problem. And so for me, I find that if that seems to be what's going on, like I'm just, for whatever reason, it's like I can't control where the belt's grinding on the machine or on the blade. It, to me, that means like the belt's kind of, instead of cutting, it's kind of sliding around and skating around and not actually doing what I'm trying to control it and make it do. And so when I get a new belt on there, it makes a huge difference, massive difference.
I think that there are some little things that are also adding to the problem. One is the pressure you're putting up against the knife and how the knife is on the platen. And I think what happens a lot of times is, because we're humans, and if we're freehanding something, we're not going to get the same accuracy as a jig. And sometimes you'll touch the corner of the platen, and that'll gouge. Mm. Or sometimes you're putting your, or if you're not using a push stick, maybe you're holding the handle of the knife in one hand and the tip in the other, and then you're almost bowing the knife that you don't even realize. Yeah. And then you're all the only abrasives that you're seeing is on the corners of the sides. Or if the platen could have a fucking dent in it because you've been sticking on that same spot all the time, and you might have like inaccuracy. I actually have a platen that had some Pyrex on it, and the Pyrex started cracking on the edge. And if I touched that edge, I could see I could transform the whatever the cracking is into the profile of the grind. So there are all these different little things. And I was actually talked to Pariah Knives and Chris Adelhart a couple years ago. And I said to him, I think that Chris does one of the best belt finishes in the world, in the knife making game. I mean, he is fucking nuts. I said, so when you're doing your grinds, are you breathing? And he goes, I'm holding my breath. And he's like, holding it, those last few passes, you're holding your breath and you're sucking your balls up in your guts and you're crossing your toes and you're crossing your fingers and you're like, you know, fraying to whoever you got to fray to and you're pulling clenched it along. Up, yeah. And because it's like last chance for glory, baby. Mm. So I think that there are a lot of problems. I also think the push stick, there's different, if you have a push stick that's not flat and it pushes in a spot, you might have problems. I think the push sticks, we start to use push sticks too long and then they kind of dome and then you end up getting a different pressure against the platen.
Yeah. When I was doing my camp knives and I went through various sort of iterations before I sort of released them, I found it far easier as well using a thicker stock. So I had lots of stock hanging around that I'd use for like, you know, kitchen knives. So I think, let's try and make a camp knife with it. Too thin because you're never going to get that crisp edge on a... You know that type of grind line I mean, but it just, you know, halfway up the blade, I suppose. Mm. But obviously, a thicker blade, you're going to have a sharper angle, which means you're going to have a sharper sort of finish to your grind as well. So maybe that could be another cause. Maybe your stock is really thin, so your angle is really shallow. Especially if you're using it, you know, a heavy grit, you're never going to have a really crisp line there. So that's possibly another thing. But like Jeff just said, hold your breath, take a very good stance, brace yourself. You know, you don't want to be shaking around. Brace yourself and commit and go for it.
You could also be starting, you know, if you're holding in your right hand, your dominant hand, you're holding the blade, you could be touching that part of the belt, that part of the platen first, and it's not coming on square. It's not coming on square, and all of a sudden you got a little bit of a dip down towards your. All of a sudden you're taking off more material closer to the plunge line. That happens too. Yeah. Or you're going back and forth, and when you go back and forth, instead of taking swipes, you go back and forth and back and forth. That middle part might be, you know, getting more material off than it would if you just took, you know, strokes out.
Yeah. And it's always handy to sort of mark where you want those lines as well, because in those first few strokes, you know, you're not gonna balance it right and all the rest of it. But you've got those you know maybe 10, 15 strokes before you get to that line to get things right. So yeah, always you know use some marking fluid and you know scribe a line that you want to grind to as well.
And be a cheater. Get yourself a jig.
Get yourself a jig.
I mean, I'm just kidding. Obviously, all of a sudden, all these like stock removal guys got their hackles up. Just relax. Get yourself a jig. Get yourself a jig and realize that jigs are where it's at. You don't want problems. Get yourself a jig.
Yeah. Yeah. I did see on Facebook, I think it was Facebook this week. I think it was Brian House. He makes this platen. So you don't need a jig, but the platen comes right down to give you the kind of angle you need for that kind of grind.
You mean the true tilt, the true tilt, the true tilt,
the true tilt,
true tilt from Housemade Industries.
Fucking industries. Looks pretty sick, actually. Yeah. Looks pretty good.
Yeah, it looks really good.
Yeah. So yeah, that's another option.
Brian House, he went from Housemade to Housemade Industries. He's a fucking.
He gets a mention every week.
Yeah, he's the man. B. Cone and Ben, they do a nice job over there at Work For Podcast. I may or may not have a problem with them.
Really? Uh-oh.
I'm just kidding, honestly. I'm kidding, honestly. All right, we'll save it for the after show. I'm kidding, obviously, but not really. Let's save it for the after show. I might have a problem with
them. Okay. Oh, boy. Okay.
That's a radio tease.
With that, then let's get to the after show because I'm curious. We got anything else we need to mention?
You want to do a couple more questions?
Let's do a couple more. How good the guys at Trojan Horse. Forge are. Because they're doing a special raffle as well for Jason Knight's son and, you know, the fire that they had. They're just good guys at Trojan Horse. They've sent us a vice each as well, and they're awesome. So if you are looking for advice, go and, you know, get involved in that auction as well.
Well, it's over now. The auction I had.
Is it really? Actually, yeah, I think it was a raffle, actually, wasn't it?
It was a raffle that every $5 you put in got you a ticket to win Vice. And they did well. Yeah. I talked to Sean a little bit. And it was a really nice, it was a very, very nice. Everyone's coming to the plate for Jason and his family, and it's good. And there's still a GoFundMe for Tiger Lily's got a GoFundMe going, and I think something's going on for Tristan, I'm not 100% sure where that is.
Cool. Okay. Right, let's pick a question each, and then we'll head off.
Real quick, I'll add that Maritime Knife Supply actually has knife grinding jigs from TR Maker Adjustable. They're adjustable knife grinding jigs. And I've seen these, and I've been eyeballing them actually a little bit. They're pretty slick, and they allow you to use a work table, set a certain angle, and when you come back to the grinder, you know, because you look at your work every once in a while, see where things are at, you always are approaching the piece again and the grinder and the platen all at the same exact angle every time, and it helps remove some of that margin of error that we do get from freehand grinding. So go check that out on Maritime Knife Supplies website.
I got one. Cool. Like it.
You got one of those?
Yeah. I got one after I used them with Tomer. Tomer and I were using them, and they're pretty nice.
They look fucking slick.
Going back to Barcelona, by the way.
Ooh.
Very excited.
When are you going?
We haven't announced the dates, but it's going to be in June. It's going to be two weekends in June.
Yeah. So you stay in for a whole week?
Well, what we're going to do is we're going to teach. It's also going to be a graduation gift for my daughter. So we're going to go out there as a family. I'm going to teach a class. Then we're going to spend the week doing whatever. And then I'm going to teach the next class and go home. So
nice.
Yeah. Treat He's the man. Too. I love Tomer's a fucking guy. And I can't talk about it. Sorry.
Oh, boy.
He does. We do have a collab that he's going to put out pretty soon. So
sweet.
Kind of nice.
Okay. Let's do some questions then. I've got one from Cody. Hey, Mark, can I ask you a question? I hear everyone talking about using 1x30 or 2x42 belts. Is there any advantage to using something sized like that versus a 4 or 6 inch belt? Wow. Well, I mean, personally, I think the longer the belt, the better. So, which is why I think it's 2x72 is almost like an industry standard, I suppose. A couple of reasons for that. You've got a lot more abrasive on the belt. You don't build up heat so quickly. And I think sort of a 2 inch platen then is pretty much where you want to be. Any sort of bigger, and you will generate a lot of heat on the blade. So, I know a lot of people use, you know, 4 inch or 6 inch belts. I never have done, but I could see that become maybe a problem. Having so much contact with the steel could be a problem. Whereas I think 2 inches, you know, it's 2 inches is enough. Ask Kyle. but yeah, 2x42. I can't see any advantage of 2x42 over a 2x72. Maybe it's difficult to get belts where you are. I don't know, but I can't really see any advantage to that. What about you guys? What do you think?
What do you think, Jeff?
Get ready for the person who starts to make the 6x72 grinders. That could be a fucking motherfucker right there. Can you imagine? Boop, done. My side's done. No problem.
Exactly.
I mean, those belts are easy to make. I mean, I remember when I was the last fabrication shop I was at, we had these stroke sanders that were, you know, they were like 30 feet long belts with 6 inches of 4 to 6 inches of wide, and there you can get some shit done with that. I think the funny thing is like, once again, I think we all handle knife issues like knife makers with a set standard of how things are done in the knife making community. So if you, I think you could probably figure out a way. If you had yourself, like my old boss calls me up and says, "Yo, I'm going to sell this company. Are you interested in the stroke sander?" I'm going to think about it, because I'm going to think, how could I retrofit everything so I could start grinding belts and use one belt? The belt might cost $120, but maybe I can get, you know, a shit ton out of it. Maybe I should think about there's a way to do it. So I think that all decisions made should be made based on how it works for you, not based on what everybody else does. I'm convinced. Never mind.
I like the 2 inch. Was at Dragon's Breath. They had 3.5 inch wide belt grinders, and I could see how that would play great. And what was it? I think they were 3.5 inches wide, and they were like 10 foot long belts. They were monsters. Wow. But they had tons of abrasive. And they had that wider work surface. And so the wider your work surface, the kind of like the more stable you can be grinding a particular flat surface. When you get down to a 1 inch, things can get a little fiddly. But if you are working smaller projects, and also just with reps, you get used to that. You can work that out, and you can figure out. Part of the problem with like a 1x30 is they typically don't have the power to really get it done.
Yeah.
Especially with the amount of friction that you're creating by grinding steel against the belt with a metal backing, like you're effectively pinching that belt. And is the motor going to be strong enough to keep going? That is a big concern and something to take into consideration. I like the 2-inch wide belt because it gives me, for me, it feels stable enough to be able to control where I'm grinding. But also, it's narrow enough that it allows me to, like, if I want to do a recurve blade, I'm very comfortable grinding a recurve blade on a 2-inch wide belt. But I wouldn't feel comfortable being able to create that kind of inside curve on a 3.5-inch wide platen. Or anything wider, right? So it really creates a limitation on what you can kind of do and flexibility. So 2 is nice because you got the stability, at least for me, I have the stability and the consistency I need for doing whatever I'm doing. You get bigger than that, things get you lose flexibility. You get smaller than that, you kind of lose control. And so for me personally, I really like the 2-inch wide belts. Now, whether you're doing 2x72 or 2x30 or 2x42 or 2x48, whatever the fuck, the smaller the belt, the quicker the abrasive is going to run out.
more than anything, because you're just working with less abrasive in general, so it's not just not going to last as long, and you'll be blasting through belts. But if that's your situation and that's what you got to work with, then make it work.
Yep, yep. I mean, some of the stuff I've seen people make with, you know, 1x30s, incredible. So
absolutely, yeah, I've seen those.
You'll make it work, whatever. But I personally, given a choice, I think a 2x72 is pretty much, you know, perfect for what I'd use it for anyway.
Can't get much better than that.
Mareko and Jeff, do you want to pick one quickly?
I'm ready for the after show, personally.
Me too.
Can't get much better. We've done enough. You've done enough.
Okay. Okay. Thank you all for listening. Happy New Year to you all. I promise I'll be on it and brighter next week. I promise. Until then, speak to you soon. Bye-bye. Okay, so what's the beef, Jeff? What's going on?
Those motherfuckers over there at the Workford podcast. God damn it. No, I'm just kidding. I actually, B-Cone did me a solid. We both had booked Noah Vachon at the same time. Full blast. And I didn't make I didn't make, you know, I don't talk to other podcasts just because it's like, but at the same time, like there are sometimes a guest will be on and I'm just like, for another podcast, I'm like, well, I'm not going to, I'll stay away from him for a while. And yeah, I love Noah, sense. And Noah is incredible. Noah Vachon is unbelievable. And he was supposed to come on when I had Fingal on. And for some reason, we had we were some weird connection issues. And I said to Noah, I said, you know, why don't you come back on in the beginning of the year? And so he sent me a message. He's like, oh, I forgot. I'm going to be on Work for It. So I was like, he said, do you want to keep doing it? And I thought, well, we'll do something different. And I messaged Brian Cohn and Ben Butler and Brian House are just great dudes. And I am a fan. And I talked to B Cohn and he's just like, he's very busy with buying this new house. And he's just like, don't worry. I'll take care. I'll have him on another time. And I said that I would appreciate how flexible he was. And I told him, now you have a favor for me. So if you never need me to come on, you need a fill-in host, you need a favor. B Cohn now has a very elusive, very, I'm not happy about it. He has a card.
Golden ticket.
He has it. Not a golden ticket. He has got a card that he can play, and it'll be a no questions asked card. Well, some questions asked. Don't go crazy. My father used to say to him, you can have whatever you want, but within reason. This is the same thing. So, B Cohn is the man, and we wish him nothing but the best. So I'm going to have Noah back on full blast. So
sweet. Nice one. So what's going on this week? Anything exciting?
What do you got, Mareko? Anything exciting? You have to talk some funny stuff, huh?
I'm actually getting ready to go to Hawaii next week.
Whoa.
I'm going over to do some work with Neil Kamimura, our friend, and get some time in the sun, maybe. I don't know. It's kind of the rainy season over there right now. But mostly I'm going over to go work with Neil. I'll be taking some projects of my own that I'm working on, as well as doing some work with him and his guys over there. Let's see. I don't know what else. I think that's basically it.
How long are you going for?
I'm there from the 9th to the 15th. Oh, I think, I mean, and then I should have enough service. Ooh, I don't know.
Don't worry about it. We'll cover for you.
Maybe get B-Cone on.
That's not a bad idea.
Yeah.
It's not a bad idea.
Well, I'm away as well, actually. So I should be okay connection-wise to carry on anyway. So I should be able to do it anyway. But I'm going back to Rockfield.
Shit.
Next, I think I'm going on the, let me just look at the dates, the 17th and the 18th, I'm there. So I'm back on the Friday, the 20th, I think, actually. So I'll be fine to do it anyway. So yeah, it's fine. Don't worry.
You mean,
what are you going to be doing?
Noel Gallagher?
No, I'll talk about it another time. It's a business thing. Right. So yeah.
Oh, it's not some juicy shit.
It's no juicy shit. No, it possibly it could become a very juicy shit. I'll talk about it later when I know what's going on. Yeah.
Well said.
What else have I been doing? So I've been building a studio here at the house. So one of the reasons I've been so flustered with this podcast today. Every time we do this podcast, I need to bring everything out, basically onto the kitchen table. And, you know, Amy's trying to put the kids to bed at the same time. And I'm like, everybody be quiet. I need to get in. And it's just like, it's been a pain. So, yeah, since we've been in this house, I haven't really had a permanent space for a studio, which I did have last time. So I've been building one in one of the barns here. And it's going to be huge. It's going to be massive. So, but it's been quite fun to do, actually. So, yeah, just lots and lots of rock wool areas. So it's going to be sort of soundproofed as well. So, yeah, it's been a good project to work
on. So you're not going to just put it in, like, one of the horse stalls? You're going to take up the whole barn?
Well, it's a massive barn. So it's sort of up on... It's like you've got to go up. It's like an upper level in the barn.
Okay.
So there's going to be a control room, which, you know, as a studio would have, with a big glass window, then looking out onto the live room. Mm. So the live room is where I'll rehearse with the band, and that'll be set up permanently. And then the control room is like a small studio space, which I'll have, you know, all the podcast stuff already set up, ready to go at all times. So, yeah, this will be cool. So, yeah, I'm very excited about that, actually. I've been building the desk today. So, yeah, it's cool.
Nice.
So next week, next Thursday, are we all good?
Yeah, 100%. 100%.
Cool.
Wait, Jeff, cool. What do you got coming up?
I just talked to an editor. I'm finishing off this article for this magazine. And they liked the first draft. And it's going to be, and it's now it's going to turn into more of a, instead of just me writing an article, it's going to be this kind of thing. So I'm going to get interviewed, and it's going to be like nice little writing piece that I've, you know, fucked around and wrote something that they like. And then we're going to do that. And that was kind of neat, getting a message from my friend saying, you did a nice job. You got to do a little polishing, a couple things that I need to like translate from knife makers to readers. But hilariously enough, get ready for this. So they said, we decided that we're going to do an article. They do this piece, this magazine is called Edible Hudson. They also have Edible. It's not about weed. It's about food, and it's Edible Manhattan, Edible Brooklyn. It's in Long Island. And my friend Julia Sexton she said, we decided that we're going to do a piece on, we do this long running thing where it's how art relates to food. And we really want to talk to you about bridging the gap between knife making art and food. And I was like, and she knows me. She knows my whole fucking, like, you know, knife making is an art, and she knows my whole bag. So she's just like, it's going to be hilarious because I'm expecting you to, you know, be belligerent. I'm like, you know what? I don't take on controversial things that are like, you know, real important. You know, this is bullshit stuff. Don't worry about it. So it is going to be an interesting piece, and I'm looking forward to it. But I get the first draft came out nice, and they're happy with it, and got to do some little things. So
nice,
cool,
yeah,
very writing. Good, exciting stuff happening. Cool. Okay. Well, thank you all for listening. If you are still listening, and we shall speak to you again next week. Bye.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Stop in and save big money on your next outdoor lumber project now at Menards. Menards has the largest selection of AC2 pressure-treated lumber and decking, and it's easy to load in our outdoor lumber yard. Plus, you can get free estimates fast with our deck design program in-store or on Menards.com. Check out our weekly flyer for more great deals happening now at Menards. Save.